Hey, welcome, coffee enthusiasts, conversationalists, to another stimulating episode of Coffee with Convery. Today, I'm diving deep into the world of storytelling with a remarkable individual, Glenn Bragener. Glenn is a seasoned content producer from Toronto with a rich tapestry of experiences, ranging from a sous chef to an assistant distiller. Glenn's journey has led him to the heart of journalism, where he currently produces captivating content for the Let's Talk with Danny Stover on CFIQ 640 Toronto. Glenn's tenure at Corus Entertainment speaks volumes about his expertise. He's the mastermind between On Point, a syndicated evening show where Glenn orchestrates each episode with finesse, from selecting riveting topics to wrangling esteemed guests. His knack for radio production is unparalleled, evident in his meticulous planning, seamless auto editing, and his flawless podcast production. Glenn is dedicated to his craft and knows no bounds. His freelance endeavors and multimedia journalism have taken him on riveting adventures, from protests to cultural events, leaving an indelible mark on the media landscape. With a diploma in broadcast journalism from Seneca College and certifications in voiceover work and podcast production, Glenn's expertise shines through in every project he undertakes. His passion for storytelling, coupled with his unparalleled skills, make him a force to be reckoned with in the realm of media productions. So grab your favorite brew, let's settle in and join me as we unravel the art of storytelling with Glenn. Glenn, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Brian. It's actually going to be a lot of fun. Honored to be here.
I'm so excited to have this conversation with you and can't wait to get started. So let's start with a few rapid fire questions just to get the audience to know a little bit more about Glenn. So what are your pronouns?
He, him.
Perfect. And what is your superpower?
Like my real one or the one I want to have?
I don't know. Are they close?
No, but I'll give you the real one because it's what I actually have.
Okay.
I like to think I can talk with anybody about almost any given topic, barring, those few extreme difficult ones to talk about at all. I like to be a conversationalist.
Awesome. Yeah, I absolutely can contest to that. This is an interesting question I usually ask my guests because I think smell is one of the senses we don't talk about often. But what is your favorite smell?
I've been thinking about this one. This one is a difficult one because automatically you want to see something like bacon, because the smell of bacon cooking in the morning has so much memories to me, and there's so much nostalgia tied to that. But it's not bacon. I
Okay.
want to say, and I'm gonna get the tree wrong, and I'll find it exactly, like, oh, it's this one. So I want to say it's like pine or something. At my cottage, when my family and I would go up there all the time, it's surrounded by these coniferous trees, which I'm thinking is pine. And there was just this always this smell that was reminiscent of that, that when we were there, it was March break, or we were away, or we knew we were gonna be able to play. And it brings back all these feelings, and that smell, especially the few times I've gone back, still really holds strong to me.
Isn't it interesting how smell is such a strong sense, but we don't always talk about it. But as soon as you said the pines and the cottage, the image came right to me, right? And I could smell
Right.
it myself. It's a cool thing to get. And thank you for sharing. I love hearing people's responses to that one. Another one I'd love to ask is, what is the best compliment you've ever received?
Ooh, it depends on who gave me the compliment. No, the best compliment I've ever received. That's hard because it's not saying I don't get them, and I'm not pretending I get them all the time, but I try not to let them sink in too much because a compliment's good to hear, and it really is good to be acknowledged. But when it really does, when you let it phase you and think, oh, this was the compliment, at least in my experience, I've noticed it's easy to get big-headed, and then you start to get ahead of yourself, you kind of dissuade that. That said, you know what? One of the best compliments I've had recently, I'll at least give, was from my current boss, Mike Ben Dixon. He agreed and said that he thought I was really developed enough to take a chance hosting on the air a lot more. And this is how you and I became connected, because he asked me if I wanted a chance to develop as a host. He thought I had a lot of opportunity there. He thought I was a great addition, and my career is only taken a further step because of it. So I want to say recently, that one was one that really made me feel, after all these years, that I am on the right path, which is something you don't really get all the time. But also, it was a good compliment. Someone says, I think you have a voice to carry a 3-hour show. It's just, thank you. That feels great.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's congratulations. That's really cool. And it's interesting how I like how you talked about some people. You don't want to take these too deep and talk about it and think about it because you can get a big head and things. But that's why it's a difficult question to ask someone, but I always want to hear it because I think, you know, sometimes we
you
have
to check if we're narcissists or not.
No, not necessarily, but I've heard some really, and see, like, yours was a great response, and I'm really lucky I've had the chance to be on air with you as well, and I think you are a terrific host, so I think you're off to the right pace there and packs.
All right, well, I guess this might be my new favorite compliment right now then, so.
There you go. Guilty pleasures, go-to snacks, what's yours?
That changes. I have a sweet tooth. Like, no lie, I have a sweet tooth. I am a big fan of pastries. You know what? If I have the choice, cannolis. I will go out of my way for good cannoli, like ricotta cannoli. Chocolate chips or not, I just really love Italian pastries. I love pastries in general. So if I'm not trying to worry about, you know, just eating plate sugar and carbs, cannolis.
All right. Next time I see you in the studio, I'm going to bring in our favorite pastry that we get from our chocolate Danish from our local baker here in Gabbagetown. You're gonna die. It's incredible.
Hey, I'll always take that challenge. I'll try it.
I'll bring it in next time. Favorite subject in school?
Easy. Drama.
Drama. Awesome.
Drama was my favorite one for sure.
And thinking about the audience and everyone's kind of, you know, working and looking for a career, a lot of jobs, going to school, whatever the case may be, maybe even picking a new career path. But what was your favorite first job? Or what was not your favorite? What was your very first job, since we all had to start somewhere?
Yeah. I don't even think the chain exists anymore. I think it got absorbed by someone. I can't remember. But it was for Price Chopper, the grocery store chain. I was a produce stocking clerk.
Yeah, I know Price Chopper. Were you in the States? Because is that a Canadian store?
No, I was in Canada. I was in Mississauga. The one I worked at was at... Oh, I can't remember the exact intersection, but in Mississauga, it was just south of here, Ontario and Dundas, the 5 and 10 intersection. There was a Price Chopper there. I think it's a No Frills now, or it's one of those. But Price Chopper, I'm pretty sure, is gone. But it was there. It was there because I remember there was a barbershop across the street that I would get my hair cut at sometimes after work. And the barber people there called me Price Chopper because I came in my uniforms. And that'll always stick in my head. Just come in, Price Chopper, sit down. It's just
That's funny. Okay, this is one more and then we'll get right into your story. So if you had to describe yourself in one word, what would you say?
What I would say is intriguing. What other people would say is difficult. So it really depends on who you ask there.
I go with intriguing. All right, let's jump in. So your journey is incredibly diverse, you know, from being a sous chef to an assistant distiller and now a content producer in the media industry. Can you kind of share with the audience how this journey all began and what initially drew you into this whole world of broadcasting, if you think back, you know, a few years here?
Yeah, the culinary world was almost a stumble, an accident. I was working at a Price Chopper and then I didn't work there anymore. I was at another grocery store for a short time. This is my last year of high school where you're just kind of working a job. Yep. And Earl's, for the first one, was opening up on the West Coast. And really, the recruiter was going around grocery stores just poaching people, essentially. So I wanted another job. I had not worked in restaurants before. So I said, fine. And what I expected would be a few weeks before I didn't like it anymore turned into about a year and a half or something about at that location, where there's a lot I didn't like about cooking, but the organized chaos that you can get every day in a kitchen. And I truly mean organized chaos in the sense that everyone can be doing the same positions they do every week, but for whatever reason, somebody's mad because you're using somebody's knife, or the food delivery didn't come in, or you have an unexpected walk-in of 50 who all have allergies or something. And it kept me stimulated. As much as that'd be exhausting, it really did keep you motivated, kept you going, and kept you adapting. So the restaurant industry, a long story short, was a constantly changing living organism that when you had it right, was great to you. And when you didn't, you knew something was wrong and you had to really work it to get back to that place of perfect, which was rare to get to. A long winding path to get to radio now. We could dive into that if you want to, but it is about a decade's worth of experiences there. After that at Earl's, I actually went to university for a year at McMaster University for political science. But like you and I were talking, and I hate when people, sorry, do this, but you and I were talking just before this podcast about how important it would have been to have someone guide you on career paths and not just follow what your parents say. I like politics. I've always had a thing for it. In school, wasn't the best student, but when I tried, I did well. And our political science class, I really liked. So I went to school for that, being forced to kind of by my parents. And I did the rebellious teen thing. I kind of went to classes and I kind of messed around and kind of didn't do anything. And I wasted a year of my time. I basically had to withdraw myself from McMaster because I didn't do anything academically. My parents got me back by making them pay back every single penny from them. And that was a lesson learned because they also charged interest on that. And after I paid that all off and I'd been in the restaurant industry and just jumping around from small restaurants that like mom and pop shops that I genuinely don't think are even there anymore. I went through Greektown to try to find one of them and I don't think it's even around anymore. And smaller chain restaurants. And then I had a friend who lived out west in Banff who said he would come here to visit. He was going to be moving back and asked if I wanted to go. I had nothing really holding me here. And I was about 22, 23 at the time. So I'm like, yeah, let's pack up and go. So within a couple of months, sold my stuff, moved to Banff, Alberta, and very quickly learned that this is a tourist town that is, excuse me, a lot of it is driven by the culinary industry. So you have to buckle in on. But I got hired immediately at the Earl's over there just because I had a relationship there, but they needed a baker. Didn't know how to bake, started learning how to bake. And baking, just for everyone listening, if cooking is art, baking is straight up chemistry. It is so difficult, but so rewarding and fun once you do get a rhythm down. So if you're ever intimidated by baking, I would honestly say, give it a shot. It can honestly weirdly be de-stressing too. To knead and roll bread, for whatever reason, whether you're putting your focus on it, the textural feeling, or just knowing you're going to get some bread you made after, baking really was therapeutic. About 6 months there, I got promoted to a coach, which was like the chef below the sous chef. So I was kind of like a right-hand man to a right-hand man, if you will. And then that sous chef had a, let's say, negative altercation with my head chef and the GM's wife. And because of that altercation, he was unexpectedly and forcibly let go. And I was brought in on my day off and said, Glenn, listen, we need a hole to fill. Are you willing to step up? Throw another thing on my plate. Why not? So then I went to the management side of culinary. After about 2 years of that, another restaurant opened in Banff that was called Park Distillery. They were a giant kind of theme, wood-burning, cottager-style restaurant, but also had a built-in distillery inside. So I was brought on as a sous chef for that kitchen, which was crazy because they have a rotisserie oven, like a wood-burning six-spit rotisserie oven. So you have six different spits on it that can fit 18 whole chickens and even one time an entire pig roast. So for that job, I would, you know, you're getting the kitchen order ready, make sure the schedule is ready. And since I was a sous chef and it was a wood-burning oven that had to be maintained and everything, I was that person. So I would have to get in there early. I would have to chop wood. I would have to set the fire. I would have to keep it alive. And now throughout the whole day, you are either putting more wood and coal into it, or you're where you can, and if you can, shoveling some of the ash and content out so that it was a whole unique atmosphere, which was there. Wow. But that kitchen, because it was new and there was a high turnover of staff, it started to burn me out. And my boss noticed it, and the head distiller in the distillery noticed it. So one day he came to me when he saw I was in a particularly frustrated mood when the food order came 3 hours late in the middle of our lunch shift and I had to deal with that. And it was just stressing me out. So he came to me and said, sees I'm a really hard worker, but he also sees I want to change, and asked me if I'm willing to learn how to make liquor. I don't know who would say no to that. That was just a unique experience to me. So I got to be an assistant distiller. There was only three of us in this distillery, but we made unaged rye, and then we started aging rye. We made gin, and then we started barrel aging that gin. We made vodka that we also infused our own espresso beans. So we got espresso beans, let them soak in this big vat of vodka for about 21 days to get all the flavor and color. We had Thai chili peppers, and these were spicy Thai chili peppers. Once again, let that sit for about, we had to clock that in and find out when it was too spicy, a little spicy. I believe it was something like 14 days. You had the perfect amount of spice to make an amazing Caesar. But if you left in for like 15, 16 days, you now have an extra spicy vodka. So we had to be really on time with that. And we also made a vanilla-infused vodka with vanilla beans from Madagascar, which I learned is some of the top-rated beans in the world. And once again, infused that. So we made all of those. and we're experimenting a little bit with other liquor. I've learned how to do all that, which was a lot of fun. And then a bit of a family tragedy in late 2017, within a 6-month span, my grandfather, who was in his mid 80s, had a unexpected massive heart attack and he passed. And then a few months later, my Nana on my father's side, so my grandpa on my mom's side, now my Nana on my father's side, who had not been in great health for a majority of my life, but wasn't unhealthy, started to have, well, real bad health concerns. So my parents were able to actually call me this time and not be like, hey, grandpa just died, but Nana's in the hospital. And I flew down to visit. And then after seeing my brother, my sister, my parents, and I was affected them, I'm like, I feel like I need to be home.
Yeah.
So I tidied up my stuff in Banff and moved back home. Moving back across the country, the one thing I kind of knew I had a career in was restaurants. So I had some friends in restaurants. I've worked at some, then moved around in some of the ones in the city. I was a little bit the back of house, but then I wanted to move more into the front of house because I haven't done that yet. And I've done almost anything else in restaurants. So I was a bartender and a server and a busboy, depending at locations. Some of them were good. Some of them were terrible. And it was one day I just had a bad shift and I came home and I'm like, I don't like doing this. I don't know why I'm keep doing this. I'm getting older and I can't just do a job for a job. I want to actually like what I do. And I've always been that guy in the kitchens or anything to come with people like, hey, do you hear what's happening in the news? Or do you hear what the Canadian government did? You read this stuff about this? Like, I just like ingesting the news and I love talking with people about it as a starting point.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? There's definitely a way to do this as a career. So let's do it. And then a friend of mine just graduated from Seneca when I was looking into this for sports broadcasting. He had just been hired by TSN. I was talking to him about it. I am not the biggest sports guy, so that was not my allure, but I wanted to know what the course was like, what he felt it gave him and everything. And he had a lot of positive things to say, and it seemed more positive than what I'd heard from the other programs at the other schools. So I applied to Seneca, and beyond the pandemic disrupting my last 2 years, I think Seneca was a great move, really.
Yeah.
Like I said, I like being a conversationalist. I like being a bit of a jack of all trades. I feel like the more you've picked up along your life, the more it can really help you be not only an interesting kind of unique person, but have those empathetic views you wouldn't be able to get unless you're in this position. So I've been around career-wise. There's definitely a few career deviations I glanced over there, but I've done more than a few things. I think radio is my Radio is my favorite place so far.
Yeah. That's interesting.
The only reason I would put the distillery as a close second, at least once a week, I got a fresh bottle of some form of liquor that we produce there. So, you know, there was that sense of pride and I got to show up. But radio's radio. Like, my job is talking to interesting people, talking about interesting things, really what I would be doing on my free time and just talking about it. And this is a career path. So it's something that's still sinking in every now and then.
Yeah. Wow. What an interesting twist and turn to your whole career and your personal life as well there in the beginning. And it's interesting too, like the McMaster stint, but then Seneca had what you were interested in, so you went there. So, you know, I think it's also a good message for people to say, like, you might start out in a program thinking it's the program that you think you want to be in, or you were told you wanted to be in, and then you find out that maybe it's time to switch to something else. And then, even for you, that came a little bit after a bit of a break in the education to go actually and work and get hands-on experience as well, right?
Yeah. When it comes to schooling or learning, I was never the best student.
Yeah.
And this was always my problem. I love certain things. I hate certain things. But the one thing I hated the most is being told what I have to do, especially forms of homework. Now, yeah. As an adult, you know, you've grown up and I have to do things I don't like. But if a teacher says, you need to learn about this and you need to write this paper, and I thought I had a good understanding, I don't need to talk about whatever the topic, ancient Egypt in grade 4, or even if you're going further, I didn't feel I wanted to do a full deep dive into, I don't know, what the difference between our levels of parliament are, or what's the supreme difference between the Senate and the House of Commons, where now I know this is important, but in high school, you know, you're hard-headed and obtuse. I like to learn on my own. I like to be directed in certain things and conversationally kind of be corrected if I learn something wrong, but I kind of am a product of self-education. So yeah. I think me being alone on myself helped me to not only get rid of that kind of leftover angst I had, but also there was some form of guilt, and I'm not sure if it was guilt or shame for my lack of attention or attempts really at McMaster. I could have left the program as opposed to not really trying. So that was on me to get over. And then once I had finally, you know, faced that and realized this is just me, school can be a lot of fun. Just like Seneca, there were some negatives there I hated, but Seneca was very much what I was looking for in school, where in our broadcast class, we would have to find stories in a lot of things. We'd have to make our own stories, interpret them our own way, find interview pieces we thought were relevant or compelling and really sell that to our entire class, if not the teacher. Whereas McMaster was a lot more, here's a big lecture hall, sit down and take notes. And I vividly remember a philosophy professor I had brought his dog on stage, walked on stage after, said that he speaks fast, he doesn't like to yell, and he doesn't use a microphone. And then just started doing this whole philosophy class where the large and short of it was, what, like, I think it was more the philosophy of religion, but really the long and like the end goal of this class was to have the conversation to prove or disprove God without using religious text as evidence. So it's like, you actually have to have a conversation. And you have this arrogant jerk up front who wasn't even willing to repeat what he said or use a microphone. So that annoyed me. Whereas in Seneca, I had some of my favorite professors would very earnestly and genuinely tell you exactly the hijinks or shenanigans they got into in the newsrooms, which was rare for me, because you talk to somebody in, you know, politics, they always talk to some air of importance or opulence, where I talk to these people in the newsroom, my professor be like, yeah, I remember my director was trying to prank me on air and lit my script on fire. So I threw all the paper towards him and he freaked out while I had to be cool. Like, this is childhood pranks, but I wouldn't know this just watching the news. You guys look like professionals to me. This is what I want.
Sounds like that should have happened in the kitchen rather than in the air.
Seriously, right?
That's so interesting. And you know what? I think too, the other thing is to, and then we'll close out on this going into your, we'll go more into your content producer stuff. But what's really interesting too is you've lived what many people have lived, including myself. We have stops and starts, especially when we're younger. I always tell young people, and especially those maybe listening too, is it's okay to explore. Like, these are the years that you're exploring what's for you, what you want to do, what makes you passionate. What do you want to seek your teeth into, right? So stop and starting and doing different things. There's transferable skills you bring from all that. There's opportunities that you maybe lead, like you were leading in the kitchen or whatever the case may be. All those things come together as experiences. And so sometimes we're super critical of some of that happening, but that's really what life's all about, I think, personally. So I think you picked up things, you learned things, and that's what life's about. So, hey, we all start, stop things all the time. So let's talk a little bit about being a content producer for Let's Talk with Danny and On Point. It's a lot of behind the scenes work as well, I imagine. If thinking of people maybe wanting to go into a world of content producing and broadcasting and things like that, maybe could you share a little bit of what are the aspects of your job that you do that you find most rewarding, and maybe some of the challenges you see on a day-to-day basis? Good day in the life kind of thing.
Yeah, no, easily the challenge of content producing, the biggest challenge of content producing is guest chasing. It can be easy where, you know, sometimes, let's say, for example, if I wanted to talk a business story like we do on the Saturdays, you're an expert, I can talk to you and I can come to you with multiple topics and you can field them and you and I can have a conversation. That's not the expert I'm saying is difficult. I'm saying more specifically in this example, let's go politicians especially. Let's say, like, just in Ontario, the education minister or the ministry is making some change and some big change. And we're like, we need to talk to this minister. The amount of red tape and gatekeepers that you don't even think exist until you try to reach this person is baffling. And then depending on a bunch of factors, they may say yes, which is great. They may say no. And if they say it soon enough, it's good to hear so you can plan. Or they do what I hate the absolute most. They don't respond until it is just too late. Where I've had quite a few, especially politicians who don't want to talk about contentious issues, when I've tried to chase them, they will wait until about 10 minutes past the requested start time of the segment to send me an email back. They're like, oh, I'm sorry, I missed this. Am I too late? Yes, you're too late. And you know you're too late. This is childish. I guess that is the worst part, because you're trying to plan, especially in the evening show. You can't plan too much ahead if you want to be current news. And the two shows I've done, less so Danny, because the show with Danny Stover is a bit of a unique blend, which we can go into in a second. But when I did with Alex Pearson, was very much an evening current affair news show. where we would, it basically had to be the news of the day. And if it was the news from yesterday, that better be strong enough to carry over, to not have been covered by all the other shows in between effectively, and that we can have a unique angle on. So it wasn't a lot of 2 or 3 day chases, unless it's like a big thing, which everyone struggled. Otherwise it's, this happened this morning, we need this for this evening. So you have a very tight window. And in school, they taught us constantly, and a couple of my teachers had this phrase exactly I love. The news is at 6. Regardless if you're ready or not, the news is at 6. So if you're not ready, or you're ready at 6:05, you're already too late and it's failed.
Mm.
So to me, it's, our show was always at 7. We have until 7 to plan it, but that doesn't mean you have until 7. Your hosts want things locked in well before. You want things locked in well before. Yeah. You don't want a lot. Like, obviously, sometimes you have to do what you have to do, but the amount of gatekeepers, the amount of time wasting, and when you have all the information and everything else plugged in except for a guest confirmation, and they aren't responding a definitive yes or no, but are stringing you on, it is a level of anxiety that I've only felt in the kitchen. So that, I would say, is the most difficult part. And the best part is annoyingly the exact same thing. When you get that really difficult guest that no one else can get, there is such a sense of accomplishment and pride inside of you. And if the host is able to execute the interview better, like just as well, it's like that just explodes it even more. Where I've had people on, like, I know he's not the most impossible person, but earlier on in my career, about a year into my career, we got Chris Hadfield to come on one of the shows, Canadian astronaut. Yeah, and to me, that's just really cool. He's a really grounded, down to earth guy. I've also recently, more of a younger thing, but we've had Director X, who's a Toronto, used to be a lot of music video directors, has started branching into films. We had him into the studio where for the podcast Danny and I do, where he was a lot, once again, you think there's going to be some air of arrogance to him, but really calm. And personally, I didn't set this one up, but this is a big sense of accomplishment, a great part of the job. A previous boss of mine, through one of her connections, came to me and my host and was like, hey, Nick Offerman, and I don't know if you're a fan of Parks and Rec or not, but so it would be Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec was doing a comedy tour, and he wanted to know if we want him on the show. My host is like, oh, I don't know. And I turned to him like, you get him on the show right now. That guy is hilarious. I love him. I think he's great. And I have audio of him, you know, saying I'm a great guy, saying that he would give me a big hug if he saw me in person. I just have some random audio. So the fact that celebrities can kind of also join in on the fun, and he knew that I was just a fan and he was kind of just giving me some fun here. It was fun to once again realize that these people who we always see on TV or on pedestals or seem like political experts and talking heads are fallible humans just like us. So I've talked to a lot of people who are considered really, really smart. And it's surprising when some of them are really, really smart and great people. And other ones are like, oh, you know how to put on a really good performance. Aside from that, if I just met you on the street, I would not think you were a PhD in, you know, Russian political science or Sino-Canadian history or politics or whatever. So it's just, it is interesting the amount of grounded folks you can meet that are on your level and not necessarily lording above you the way we get them depicted.
It's really cool. It's really interesting. And I would never even thought about the whole red tape scenario, thinking of corporate America and North America and how that all works. But in your industry, I totally get it. The gatekeepers think, wow, amazing. A question I want to ask you too, like right now we're encouraging like a lot of the listeners here and people who are, you know, as we've talked recently, some people aren't happy with their jobs, or some people want to start a new job, or some people, and it's way beyond the resume. It's also about networking and building a valuable human built sort of, network of people. And I wonder, in your industry, is networking a thing? Like if someone wanted to, like, in your industry, is it a thing? Do people network, get together, build relationships? Is that how you break into the industry, through maybe networking, or like how do you get started and recognize?
Networking helps a lot.
Okay.
My experience, I was lucky. So my foot in this door, one of my professors in Seneca, Amanda Capito, who, a great woman, love Amanda.
Yeah.
She was my podcasting professor. And I remember in her class, a lot of people didn't take her class seriously, because a lot of people in my grade, in my graduating year, came into journalism wanting to be entertainment, fashion, or sports. Like, I would say three quarters of the amount of people, very openly, that's what they wanted. And there was a small collective of us who actually wanted to learn more. And in that class, I remember talking to Amanda a lot, saying that TV was fun, but seemed more stagey and like a performance to me, and less about the actual impact of the story. People would be more cared if my beard looked great, or if I was wearing the right suit, or, oh, this guy's telling a story about politics. Can he have earrings? And that to me was stupid. Whereas radio, the image didn't matter at all. In fact, the people I'd seen in radio fit more like what I dressed like. They have big long beards. They have piercings. They have tattoos and their own unique style. But on air, you don't hear any of that. And I like that you're just hearing the voice in the story. So I talked to her about that. She knew some people who worked at 640, place I'm at now. And she said, cool, we don't do an internship with them, but if you want to give that radio station a try, we'll get you an internship there. And that turned into me meeting, at the time, the executive producer and one of the news anchors. I had a good rapport a couple months after my internship. And I'd graduated heat of the pandemic. So basically job opportunities were gone. But this networking and the internship was nothing, but I networked with these people there. I found we had common ground and sense of humor. Like, sitting in the office for a while, everyone in the newsroom was cracking Simpsons jokes or Seinfeld jokes or Office jokes. Like, oh, this is my sense of humor. Great, I'll fit right in. So I started, you know, building rapport with people. A couple months later, they asked me to freelance, check out a protest. It was a Black Lives Matter protest in the city. I'm like, this is awesome. I'd love to do it. And I'm happy they were covering it. So I had a lot of fun there. And that slowly built to, hey, we have a part-time position and we have this. But I would say, like, it got me my foot in the door. Talking with my professor one-on-one, and not in a teacher-professor mentality, more like, hey, Amanda, I want to talk with you about this because I want to get genuine truth about this industry. And most professors aren't, but I know you will. Tell me what it's like. Tell me this. And I would just kind of I don't know how much we can swear, so I'll be blunt, but I wasn't trying to be a kiss ass here or anything. I was genuinely trying to utilize her firsthand information. It helped me. And then even in my career now as a content producer or anything, there are some contacts that started off as contacts, but then, you know, when you email, when you talk to them a little bit, you try to work in a little bit more of yourself into it, so they get to know you better. So now there are people to this day, even though I'm still not working on some of the previous show I did, will still reach out to me, be like, hey, I know this may not be the greatest fit for your show, but we haven't talked in a while. I don't know if this is up your alley or not, which is great. People still throw stories to me. If I ever see them in the wild, it's not like you look away. It's, hey, how you doing? We finally get to talk. So I think networking is important, but I would also say be genuine with your networking. Don't waste your time networking someone because you feel as though they're important and you need to have them. That will happen. But network with people that you feel have a mutually beneficial relationship. Someone who you can learn from, who has maybe a position or something that you need for your career, but at the same point that you can help benefit too. If you want networking to really work, you can't just know people. They have to know you as well. You kind of have to stick with them, but not in a way like you come over, hey, I'm Glenn. I'm this content producer. I've done these shows. I'm a great guy. Know that I'm good for radio. That just, that goes over the head. You're giving them a sales pitch. You remember people who I leave the conversations. That was an interesting guy. He had some good takes. I would love to talk with him again.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel, is an effective form of networking. So I think networking is important, but networking with intent and genuine interest, or at least a genuine compelling motive, is better than networking for the sake of networking. There are events for networking for that. I can meet people like that on LinkedIn or social media where we just, our interests align, cool, where we know each other, but we don't really know each other.
Yeah. Wow, super insightful and impactful there. I mean,
I hope so, because I feel like I ramble a little bit.
No,
so
I no, I absolutely not. Like, this is exactly the content. And I even learned too that you went through an internship to get to where you are. And that's why I always tell young people, like, look for a place where you can feel it out, check it out, let them find out who you're all about. And right. And then navigate once you're in there and build your relationship strong. And I love what you said about networking with intent, because that's the other piece. You know, too many people treat it as an inanimate object, like, I got to go network, right? It's like, no, that's not the, like, you go to meet people and build relationships. Would you ever go to a birthday party or a friend's house to network? No, you go right?
So and I feel like there might be extremes. Like, if you're a real estate agent and you're competing with 75,000 other real estate agents in the city, then yeah, you might just need to have your name plastered everywhere. So just, that is networking for the sake of networking there, and I get that. But in this industry, I wouldn't have connected with you if I didn't actually try to have genuine conversations with you.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah, and that's why, having the time with you on the air has been incredible. And then I wanted you on here to share your journey, because I think there's a lot of people looking for different types of jobs and careers. And what you do to me is fascinating, because I've never been in that world. And I think it's interesting for others to hear. And also, I want to point out, big shout out to Amanda, because she's also the reason why I got on the air with you guys.
There you go.
I met her at a conference.
Two shout outs, Amanda. There you go. You're earning
Amanda. Because look for those super connectors. That's what I call Amanda. She's a super connector, yeah. Right? And
that's a good term. I like that.
Yeah, I think more people need to be called that. And that's what I would say she is. She's and genuine, and she helped me get introduced to this just because she saw my energy on talking about talent and different things. So yeah, huge shout out to Amanda. We both have a big place in our heart for you, for sure, here.
And then see that right there, it shows how small a world it really is. You and I have Amanda in common, but aside from that, there's very few reasons our paths would actually naturally cross outside of this workplace.
That's
so
right.
That's another reason, like you said, those super connectors, but network like that, because you never know how it'll turn out. Even if you meet someone one day who doesn't have an immediate benefit, like Amanda, meeting Amanda helped me for school for sure, helped me my career wise for sure. But down the line, when she is no longer even at Chorus Entertainment at 640, is still a connector between you and I.
Yep, 100%. And that's something that will be there. So awesome. There's great examples for our listeners to think about. I want to jump a little bit around here to your, you know, idea of being in both traditional radio broadcasting and digital media, and get your take on where do you see the future of journalism evolving, as particularly with the context of new technology, platforms, AI? Do you have thoughts on like where you think this goes?
I have thoughts.
Okay, good.
This is a big area of worry in the industry right now. I can say specifically at my station, it has been for a while, because the media landscape is evolving so fast, it is nearly impossible to keep up these days. And the introduction of AI just makes it that much more competitive. Think of it like this: 5 years ago, 10 years ago, safely, but say even 5 years ago, generally speaking, our competition on the station would have been other radio stations. Now it's other radio stations, other podcast sources, streaming things like Spotify or iTunes, SoundCloud. We're competing with basically multimedia entertainment completely these days. And the problem is, we are the ones who are stuck in a very, I don't want to say archaic, but let's say limited medium. We're radio. We're AM radio. We don't have, well, yes, we can be on the internet. Radio is on the internet, but kind of directly speaking, we don't have all the time video. All the time radio isn't just, you know, you can just turn on your computer, go on YouTube and watch a full radio show. Yes, they do that. And we are even talking about doing stuff like that at our station. But that's not what talk radio is. And then we question, especially some of the older hosts, this is more like TV now instead of radio. Is it going to be the same? Are we going to draw the same crowds? Are we going to have to change our entire show? So it's a very, and I'm trying to be safe as I say this, because if you're asking me the personal one, our industry is in for a rude awakening very soon. And I am scared of saying that, but we're doing everything we can. But sadly, I think we are cable TV in the line of streaming networks.
Yeah,
will exist, but in what capacity? Probably a heavily reduced one. I think AM radio will always have a place. There is even as far as a, I would say, necessary infrastructure, radio to me has a place. If there's a blackout, the radio can still be active.
Yeah,
but will we have the same power we would have, you know, 20 years ago in the heydays of shows like Frasier or any of those other ones? No, I think those days of almost the golden era, the opulence of radio, are almost dead.
Yeah.
So I think I right now am in an interesting time, and truly interesting, where it can be good and bad. It's just we're watching the media landscape evolve. And right now, every time you think, okay, well, now I know what it is. You know what? Radio might have thought they knew what everything in media was like. And then something like TikTok launches, and that just completely disrupts everything, because TikTok is the medium that is the medium right now. Like, pop music is designed for TikTok these days. Speakers are designed for TikTok. There are even shows that specifically kind of have certain points that they know, like, this will be a great TikTok moment if we drop this or anything like this, as opposed to this could just make a good YouTube post or an Instagram post. TikTok, it's what lifespan could this have on this medium? Something we wouldn't have thought about a few years ago. So what will happen tomorrow? who knows? Someone may find a brand new format of couldn't even guess. It's like,
yeah. No, it's interesting. And also what's new, some things that are also coming back, like I've been seeing things like all over the place, people are looking for Sony Walkmans again and things like that. And I, you don't know, like, I think the evolution of this is going to be definitely impacted in a quick pace, as is everything else, right? With AI and everything going on. But it will be interesting to see how it evolves. Cause I'll tell you right now, we have a radio in our house that's on every single day. Like, and I just like the idea of hearing that in the background. And there's something to me that's nostalgic, and also not just nostalgic, but informative. That's kind of what I do when I'm tired of, you know, all the talking heads on TV that are giving me a headache. It's an interesting, I'm glad I asked the question, because I really do think it shows how disruption can happen in all industries and how we're all reacting to it in different ways. And it's evolving, and it's evolving at a fast pace, as we know. Can I ask you a question about skills? Because another thing is, a lot of listeners and people on the podcast talk about, you know, the most important skills they learned or qualities to be successful in their industries. And, you know, it's interesting how we talk a lot more now about human skills than we do about anything these days, which used to never get the attention. But in your world of, you know, media and others, broadcasting and things, what do you feel are the most important skills or qualities a person needs to have for the industry?
One of the most important skills, I think, beyond the ability to speak, I think would be the ability to adapt. Okay. This industry, if it's a formulated podcast, like, you know, this is a scripted show, this is what we have, that's a lot more safe. But especially in the live format, it's a living organism where halfway through the show, for whatever reason, the guest might just not come through, or that connection might drop, or, which has happened before, especially during the pandemic, the host gets completely disconnected because they're working from home and there was a blackout. Or, you know what? This happened when I was working in the evening show on Let's Talk. It was about the last hour of our show and the war in Afghanistan broke out. And then another time that it's like 9:30, so we're about to wrap up the show. Me and the host had just talked about to wrap the show, and then, China's returning the two Michaels. We didn't expect this. This is just coming down the news wires. We have to talk about this because we've talked about it for months. Glenn, you're going to have to piss some people off and get on the line and call up whoever we can to get on the air with us, because we need someone for this. So it's really not being married to what you've made, okay, being able to dance quickly on your toes. And I think the other big one, which I think messes a lot of people up, is the ability to deal with time-sensitive pressure. I have seen some people who are amateurish at the job not realize that that time crunch is not just an illusionary number. If you're, you know, let's say the show's at 6:30, you're still dawdling around, you don't have all your guests locked in, you don't even know the full topics for the show. You really don't realize how time management matters. And then at other points, you need to remember that it's, once again, live radio. If a guest doesn't come on the air, that's nothing against the producer. That is nothing against whatever. It's just, well, damn, that's the way it is. I can sit here, stress about it, and make the show much more difficult for the entire team, including myself. Or I have to just accept this. We'll move on and deal with it later. It's a problem in a show like this that's live. It's not TV, which is great, but if the team starts to fall apart mid-show, it's reflected on air, and the listeners may not notice it exactly, but you hear that. Whereas if there's cohesion, if everyone's on the same page and knowing that, it's a Navy SEALs term or something, but I've definitely heard it, I think, going back to at least Vietnam, embrace the suck. Everyone has to embrace the suck together, and it definitely becomes a better process. And even at the end, if everything in a show goes wrong, like a guest just goes on a racial tirade mid on live air, it's like, well, cancel that. And then another guest doesn't even come on. It's like, well, cancel that. And then halfway through a segment, the host mic loses power. It's like, okay, well, we have to move forward with that. At the end of the show, if we can all say, here's what happened and why, so we at least know what the solution is, but laugh at it with each other, we came through it together, as opposed to one person feeling like, well, you left me hanging, or you didn't ask the guest this question, I worked so hard to get them, or something. Then you just have a dissonance that reminds me of a kitchen that's in the middle of a rush and falling apart.
Wow, I'm laughing because when you say adaptability and then you describe it, I'm like, that's adaptability on steroids.
Yeah, no, it is. It's like,
because people think this in the business world. I'm like, no, adapting to like a meeting. This is like live on air, guests not saying what they should, this, that. I mean, that is a wow. That takes a special person to be able to navigate that and come out the other end and be chill and like figure it out.
You have to do what you have to do, man. And you know, you can't really lose your mind on someone on air. So it's like, oh, well, you just let's move on beyond that now.
Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you later. Hey, I know we covered a lot of ground today. This has been like, it's so fun. Like I was really looking forward to this podcast with you. And I'm so lucky to have the opportunity to be on the air with you once in a while too. So I want to thank you, but is there something I didn't get to that you wanted to share maybe for the audience or the listeners that has been on your mind that you wanted to talk about that I didn't ask?
Yeah, we brought it up and it's kind of the whole point of this podcast. So I feel like I just want to emphasize it.
Sure.
Something my dad taught me a long time ago that I think is one of the better things that stuck with me. What you're doing in life is not set. There, especially in career-wise, there's like 5 or 6 that the average person will go through. So if you're feeling like this is the career for you, but you're finding yourself looking or yearning for more, I'm not saying the grass is always greener, but I am saying you are not stuck in what you're doing unless you want to be. There's always something else you can try to do. There's multiple avenues to try to get to it. Even if it requires school, I went back to school at 29. And I when I started was definitely like, oh, I have a time crunch, I'm worried. But after it, it's my life. What am I racing for? We all get to the same finish line. You might get there before I do, but we all literally get to the same finish line. So why try to run a race against someone else? Run it for yourself. Live your life.
That's super impactful, so insightful. And man, I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate you being on today. It's been really fun catching up in this, I'm looking out the window, snowstorm that's upon us. I don't know.
It's a great day to work from home. I'll give you that. So
It is. So, but thank you so much, Glenn. It's been a pleasure connecting with you here and learning a lot more about you. I really enjoyed myself learning some new ideas around how to think about things. And I'm sure our audience has as well. So thank you so much for joining.
Oh, Brian, this has been a lot of fun. This time has flown by. I had a lot of fun doing this, man. I can't wait to speak with you again. And yeah, true honor to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So for our listeners, if you liked what you heard today, please share this podcast with your network on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a rating and also follow Coffee with Convery on Instagram, where we feature all our shows. This has been Coffee with Convery. And until next time, please stay well.